Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the U.S. did what in the World Cup soccer game last night? We'll talk to New York Times columnist and soccer maven George Vesey and take your calls on whether you found yourself caught up in the drama. And to help you get caught up in the future rounds of this drama, if you haven't been yet, he'll give you a little more of a viewer's guide to some of these U.S. players who are suddenly bigger names than they were 24 hours ago. Also today, Starbucks' new employee benefit, online college course tuition reimbursements. Could it be a model for working your way through college in the future? Can the GOP win back Latinos despite Eric Cantor's loss? And former Mets pitcher R.A. Dickey today with his new children's book, Knuckleball Ned, and on reading books in the bullpen, one of the few pitchers ever to do that. But first, as Iraq and Syria are being newly inflamed by the Islamist Sunni group called ISIS, one fear is that those countries are breaking up into Sunni, Shiite, and Kurdish regions. So here's a question. Why not let them break up if that's how people want to live? Back in 2006, then-Senator Joe Biden co-authored an op-ed piece calling for semi-autonomous Shiite, Sunni, and Kurdish regions as a way to avoid civil war in Iraq. It never happened. Now they're on the verge of civil war. Here is Biden with Larry King on CNN at the time.
The way forward, Larry, is to make sure that the Sunnis get a piece of the oil action. That is, that they get guaranteed in the Constitution some percentage of the oil revenues. And to allow each of the groups to have a little bit of breathing room, allow them to form, as their constitution permits, federated areas. So the Sunni, Shia, and Kurds have their federated areas where they have local control. Their constitution allows for them to have local police. That way you separate the militia, you move them back into their own areas. And in addition to that, you have to have the international community get together all the neighbors, including Iran and Turkey and all the areas, the neighbors, to agree on a hands-off policy with regard to Iraq.
Joe Biden, then a senator in 2006. So how does that relate to today? And does it provide a roadmap that could still be relevant? With me is his co-author of that 2006 op-ed, Leslie Gelb, President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, currently a Daily Beast contributor and author of the book Power Rules, How Common Sense Can Rescue American Foreign Policy. Leslie Gelb, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
So your idea at the time, as we heard, was to maintain a united Iraq by decentralizing it. Did that happen anyway, more informally, this decentralization along Sunni, Shiite, and Kurdish lines over the past 8 years?
It really didn't. It's in the Constitution, but Maliki really tried to toughen his grip on most of the country, particularly on the Sunnis. He couldn't do it on the Kurds. The Kurds are virtually semi-autonomous already. And I think everything he did in excluding the Kurds, treating them as third-class citizens, just inflamed the situation and made them susceptible to the move by the jihadis in the last couple of months.
And so in the short term, the situation is horrific and murderous, and we're hearing about slaughters and mass executions on one side and now the other side in the last few days, completely inflamed. Could your idea still be a path to peace, in your opinion, rather than a Syria-style civil war in the medium or longer term?
It's much harder to do it now. After you have such a bad experience with the central government, with Maliki, with the Shiites, the Sunnis are going to be extra special suspicious, and the Kurds more inclined to go it on their own. But it's important that we try. I think it's in the interest of almost everyone except the Shiites, the jihadis, that we try to keep the country whole. Otherwise, you're going to have a Syrian-Iraqi radical area creating problems throughout the Middle East. So we ought to try to do what's in the Iraqi constitution and have a federal system where power devolves to the local groups so that they feel that they're not being disenfranchised by the Shiites in Baghdad.
And here is a clip of Secretary of State Kerry yesterday also still holding up a unified Iraq as a goal.
I think we are open to any constructive process here that could minimize the violence, hold Iraq together, the integrity of the country, and eliminate the presence of outside terrorist forces that are ripping it apart.
John Kerry yesterday. But Leslie Gelb, let me push this idea of, or just push back a little bit on this idea of holding Iraq together as a goal, which he articulated and which you articulated a minute ago. The United States is almost unique in world history as a nation founded on pluralism, a voluntary nation of immigrants from all over, other than the poor Native Americans who were the victims of all that. But if people in the Mideast want to live in a Shiite nation where the population naturally occurs, or a Sunni nation, or a Jewish state, or a Kurdish state, why defend the old colonial borders at all, which were phony to begin with?
Well, I'm not proposing that we defend them militarily. I'm proposing that we try to keep the place together diplomatically, with a diplomatic strategy, because of the consequences of letting the thing divide up that way, because I think it provides a permanent home for extremism within the heart of the Middle East. And we're going to need to do this with a massive overhaul strategy that's very complicated to carry off, but we got to try. One element is what we're doing, pressing Maliki to make political gestures to the Sunnis in particular about a new role for them where they can share power, where they can run their own affairs. Another element, by the way, if he doesn't do that, the chances of getting an Iraqi army that will fight the jihadis just almost zilch. Secondly, we do have to work with the Iranians. The Iranians in this interest have interests common to the United States. Now, people say, well, how can that be? The Iranians are this terrible revolutionary state. Well, they forget the fact that the Iranians cooperated with us in the first 2 years of the Afghan War. They were the ones who protected the eastern border of Afghanistan and fought against the Taliban.
And also,
so we worked with them there.
And also, in pure Shiite Sunni terms, if this isn't too simplistic, this group, this radical group that's on the rise, ISIS, is Sunni. The rest of Iraq, or the majority of Iraq, is Shiite. The majority of Iran is Shiite. And so they are natural allies with us against ISIS. So do you think the United States missed an opportunity in the meeting that we had with Iran yesterday to work on explicit military cooperation because the U.S. said that did not come up and they have no such plan?
Yeah, well, I don't know whether it did not come up. In situations like this, as you well know, Brian, we don't know what to believe. We really don't know what's going on for sure. But my guess is that there's more going on than we're being told. The situation is dire, and under these circumstances, Americans are willing to look to an adversary to help us against an even greater threat, namely the Sunni extremists. That's the bigger threat, and it's not just a threat in Iraq; it's a threat in Syria as well. And so you look for help wherever you can get it. We're not going to get it from our friends and allies in the area, the Turks, the Jordanians, et cetera. They're not going to do anything. The Saudis, the Qataris, the Kuwaitis. Well, hell, as you well know, they've been supplying money and arms to the jihadis in Syria and now in Iraq all along. So part of this strategy is we've got to crack down on that. But a key is figuring out a way to work with the Iranians. And it's not just Kerry and President Obama who see the need to do this, Brian. I heard Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday entertaining the possibility of working with the Iranians. In situations like these, you look to whoever might cooperate with you against the bigger threat. We should have been doing this in Syria over the last 2 years. Now, Assad is a bad guy, and over time we ought to try to get rid of him. But meantime, the biggest threat in Syria is to us and to our friends and allies is not Assad, it's the jihadis. So in Syria and in Iraq, we've got to look to forming a coalition against these guys, because otherwise our friends in the area will be endangered.
My guest, Leslie Gelb, President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, former New York Times foreign affairs columnist. He was Thomas Friedman before Thomas Friedman, former Pentagon official and other things in the U.S. government. And listeners, if you want to get in with a question for Leslie Gelb, because he knows this through long experience, or if you want to get in with your opinion about what the United States should do next, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take a call from Tedla in Flushing. Tedla, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. I don't really endorse the idea of breaking up Iraq into Sunni Shia, because that nobody can tell me that will guarantee peace. And the fact of the matter is that why do you label the Sunnis as the followers of jihadists? The jihadists are not elected by anybody, so they can't raise arms in the name of Sunnis. So the starting now, this gentleman is telling me that the Sunnis are represented by the jihadists. That is a false analogy. We went far in the Iraqi war supporting Saddam Hussein. What was the logic there? So we were supporting Saddam Hussein for 10-year war. And then now we are going to be told, oh, Iran is a friend. This is nonsense. I mean, the political elites, they are going to somebody else's country and destroying the name of civilization. I'm telling you, Iran is very happy now. We have Maliki over there doing whatever. What is the purpose of supporting Iran now to side with the Shia? This will never stop. The solution is leave the people alone. The jihadists are not going to come and invade United States, period.
Ah, Tedla, I'm going to leave it there. You put a lot of really interesting questions on the table. To his last point, Leslie Gelb, he says the jihadis are not going to come and invade the United States, period. And when you get down to it with the Lindsey Grahams and the John McCains and others, the reason that they say the U.S. needs to step up our involvement there has nothing to do with who rules in the Middle East. It has to do with there could be another base like there was in Afghanistan before 9/11 to stage future 9/11s. How relevant do you think that argument actually is? How much of a threat of exactly that, which Lindsey Graham says there is and Tedla says there isn't?
Yeah, well, we don't know. We've had that one attack, really, from Afghanistan, and we worry about it. The jihadi threat is now so dispersed in Africa and the Middle East that it's really difficult to tell, even if the threat would come from these places against us, how we could stop any and all of them. It's a very difficult situation. But meantime, your caller totally misunderstood what I said. I didn't say we should partition Iraq. I said the opposite. And secondly, he said, I claim that Sunnis are all jihadis. I said no such thing. I said they were siding, many were siding with the jihadis now because of the ill treatment they received from the Maliki government.
Eric in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Eric. Eric, turn your radio off and we'll come back to you in a few minutes. Let's go to Leonard in Forest Hills. Leonard, I'm sorry, let's go to Abdul in Queens. Abdul, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, how you doing, Brian? And good morning to your guests. I sort of a comment as well as a question. The comment was, and perhaps your guests can give more clarity on the subject. Oftentimes when Iraq is referred to, they refer to it, they divide it basically into three major groups. They call them Kurdish, Sunni, and Shiite. whereas Sunni and Shiite are more ideological categorizations, Kurdish is definitely ethnic. And there really isn't a neat boundary between them, because anyone could be Sunni or Shiite depending on your ideological leanings. But so it's, I just want your guest to, if he could, speak on that more accurately, if it's
right.
more accurate.
It's a great question, Abdul. It's really a great question. And I'm sure, Leslie, that many Americans are confused when they hear these categorizations, because he's right. Sunni and Shiite are different branches of the religion of Islam. Kurdish is an ethnic group. So why are those the relevant categories?
Well, that's how they break themselves up. And the split started over religious questions between the Sunnis and the Shiites. I think the question, these differences do not justify centuries of killing each other, but they do. And the tension between these two groups has always been quite real. Not all Sunnis and Shiites are Arab either. The Shiites in Iran are Persian for the most part. The Shiites in Iraq are Arab for the most part. And the Kurds are different, as your caller suggested, than either of these groups. It's a tribal group, and you find Kurds in good numbers in Iraq, in Iran, in Syria, and in Turkey.
So in the clip that we played at the beginning of Joe Biden in 2006 being interviewed on the op-ed that you and he wrote together calling for these autonomous regions in Iraq, one of the references that he made was to oil and cut the Sunnis in on the oil revenues from Iraq, and maybe that would help to create peace among the groups. How much is this, what's going on today, about oil?
Well, sure, there's always money involved, and oil is money. But Joe Biden and I wrote about three or four pieces back at the time, because I think we saw a lot of these troubles coming. And we said the only way to head it off that we could see was through a federal political solution, giving these groups semi-autonomous power. But the central government had to retain power over three things. One was border control, another was the finances or the money, and the third was energy, and the money from the energy, from the oil and gas. And there, the money should be distributed to the different groups by the size of their populations within Iraq. So, yes, they always are concerned about money. The Kurds moved in the last week to occupy Kirkuk. And the main reason for that is not just that there are Kurds in Kirkuk, but there's oil in Kirkuk. And the Kurds wanted to get control of that oil and that money.
Are you surprised at all that the jihadis in ISIS, if they're interested in literally blowing Iraq apart, aren't attacking the oil fields or the oil lines and sabotaging the country in that respect?
No, so far. In Syria, you'll remember, Brian, that they went right for the oil fields, the oil and gas fields, and they occupy them. In fact, Assad is even buying oil from these jihadis in Syria.
Huh.
So they are very interested in this, and they're not oblivious to energy and money in addition to their religious beliefs.
Wait, they're fighting against Assad in Syria, but they're selling him oil?
Yes, they are. He's buying it.
Tara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
I know it's all crazy, Brian.
Right. Well, everybody has their various ways of starving or feeding whatever beast they think is going to be in their interest at the moment.
Exactly.
Tara in Manhattan, hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Do you hear me?
Sure can. Can you hear me?
Hi. Good morning, Brian. Good morning to your guest. My name is Tara. I'm from Uptown. I'm a Sunni Muslim woman, and I just wanted to clarify to, I know that you know this, Brian, but to your listeners, the fact that the Sunnis, we should not put Sunnis equal jihadis, equal violent Muslim in the world. Sunnis, what you're seeing happening in Iraq is only one part of some political extremist operation. And as the expert from the BBC said before, I don't think we should blow up Iraq. I think that Sunnis and Shia can live together, but they have to be recognized, and the Sunnis as a minority should be recognized and have to they have to have the right to give their words in that area, in this region.
What do you think, Tara, that the United States should do now, militarily or in any other way? Do you have an opinion?
Yes, I do have an opinion. I think that the United States should play a role of a chapeau, a huge supervisor who will help put this equilibrium into Iraq. I mean, the Shia have their word, the Sunni have their word, and the Kurds, of course, have their word, even though it's, as the previous caller said, it's an ethnic minority. But the BBC expert said, and he knows them, he's from Lebanon, he lives there, he knows that Shia lives with Sunni, they share common things of life, and I'm sure there should be a possibility of a solution can be brought by an American supervision.
Thank you very much for your call.
Yeah,
I appreciate
it. May I comment on that, Brian?
Of course.
First of all, the comment about most Sunnis being moderate, decent people, there's no question your caller is correct. And nowadays, the jihadis all often get confused with the Sunnis as such. Most Sunnis are just fine. They're just like that, just like us. Now, in her proposal, we ought to supervise the solving of these problems. We can't do that. In the first place, Americans don't know very much about these countries. Even the people who are making the policies don't know much about these countries, let alone have the power to manipulate history and culture. We can try to push things in a certain direction or talk to them about it as it affects our interests. But we ought not to exaggerate what we can do.
Leslie Gelb, my guest on WNYC, the Council on Foreign Relations, President Emeritus, as we talk about the fast-changing situation in Iraq and U.S. deliberations in Washington about what this country's role should be. And the news today, Leslie, is of increasing U.S. military involvement, not just airstrikes as a possibility, but even deploying special forces. Are Americans about to shed blood again in Iraq, and would you support that?
I wouldn't support it, no, especially under current circumstances. The troops we're sending to Iraq at the moment are to provide additional protection for our embassy compound, which is really a fortress.
In Baghdad.
In Baghdad.
And if I could jump in on that, one of the New York Times headlines on their site right now is Baghdad sees signs of strife. Now, only yesterday, on this show and elsewhere, analysts were saying Baghdad, if nothing else, is well defended by the Iraqi army and the Shiite militia groups, if need be. Do you see civil war in the streets of Baghdad as a real possibility, a threat to the U.S. embassy as a real possibility?
I see terrorist acts in Baghdad as a current reality, and I think you'll see more of that. But as far as the jihadi army coming in and conquering Baghdad, I just don't see it at all. You know, in the first place, Brian, your listeners have to realize that with all this talk about what's going on inside Iraq today, our intelligence doesn't have the foggiest idea how many jihadis in this army we're talking about. You know, is it 2,000? Is it 10,000? But it's in that range. And this small group, without tanks, without fighter aircraft, with a few helicopters they captured from the Iraqi forces, is conquering the middle of Iraq. It's because the Iraqi forces aren't fighting. There are hundreds of thousands of security forces in Iraq, upwards of a million, against, you know, seven guys with beards and rifles.
Why aren't they fighting?
Well, they aren't fighting because they don't believe in the government they're fighting for. And it's not just the Sunnis in the Iraqi army who aren't fighting. It's a lot of the Shiites, too.
Why wouldn't the Shiites believe in the Iraqi government, which we keep hearing the main knock on as being it's too Shiite?
Yeah. Well, life is mysterious, but they feel no loyalty toward them either, to the extent that they're willing to fight and die for them. Because they put them in the army, they give them a gun, they give them some sort of a paycheck. But otherwise, they don't feel that this government has done much for them either. A bunch of the soldiers who tore off their uniforms and threw their arms away in Mosul were Shiites.
Ali on the Lower East Side. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Ali.
Well, Brian, good morning. Your great program, and I have great respect for your guest, Mr. Gulb, is one of the statesmen of the century. I believe that whatever comes out of this situation is a direct result of U.S. foreign policy in Syria, which basically promoted this jihadis indirectly by encouraging Saudis and Qatar to give them money and basically finance their heinous acts. And furthermore, I believe that this mercenary, that's the best name they have, mercenaries, they're not even Muslim, and they are going against the main tenets of Prophet himself. Mm-hmm. From what you see on the internet, even animals, beasts, do not act the way they do. Killing the innocent and armed people and killing them and slaughtering them like sheep. I believe that it's about time that U.S. and Iran work together and seize the opportunity, basically, to put an end to this mayhem. Otherwise, the whole region goes up in the flames.
Ali, thank you very much.
Well, you know, Brian, I'm with your guest on 2 points. I'm in favor of working with Iran, but we've got to do it carefully, but we need to do it.
Does the new leadership in Iran, the more moderate, I won't say moderate, but the more moderate leadership in Iran present an opportunity? Would they be eager to cooperate with the U.S. to the maximum extent possible at this moment and even maybe lay the groundwork for other things like the nuclear agreement, et cetera, through this?
I think they are prepared to work with us. President Rouhani, Foreign Minister Zarif, these are pragmatists. I've met with them both, and I'm impressed with them both. And I think step by step we can have a working arrangement with them if we both make some compromises to move things along.
So last question. Your co-author of the op-eds around the 2006 era, who we were playing a clip of earlier from that time after you both called for a loosely federated, you know, independent Shia, Sunni, and Kurdish regions of Iraq, Joe Biden, now he's Vice President of the United States. Do you think he's mostly arguing in the White House today for the same things you have been on this show this half hour?
I believe so. I think he's very concerned that people not confuse what we proposed then and what he still believes as partition. We're not proposing that. We're proposing a last-ditch effort to establish a federal system with decentralized power and semi-autonomy for the regions to see if we can stitch it back together. But to get all this done, you can't just tell Maliki, do it. There's so many pieces of this. Getting the Iranians involved, motivating the Iraqis to fight, stopping the flow of money and arms from our supposed friends in the Gulf area to the jihadis that are threatening our friends in the region and threatening us. All these things have to be done, and boy, is that one hell of a hard task.
Leslie Gell, President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, Daily Beast contributor, author of Power Rules, How Common Sense Can Rescue American Foreign Policy, and several-time op-ed writer with Joe Biden before Biden became vice president. Leslie, thank you very much.
Very welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the U.S. did what in the World Cup soccer game last night? We'll talk to New York Times columnist and soccer maven George Vesey and take your calls. Stay with us.